The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Oral questions put by members to ministers. It is now 3:30. We will finish question period at 5 p.m. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians want to know what is going on at One Government Place. They want to know how their government can make a two-thirds of a billion-dollar mistake with their tax money. They want to know why they are paying higher fees while their income gets taxed at a higher rate. And they want to know why this Premier says one thing and does another. So my question to the Premier, with an HST hike in full effect, higher user fees, and more of their income being taxed every year by the NDP, why should Nova Scotians believe any projections that the government puts on paper?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure what the point of that question was. That's not unusual for the questions from the opposition. I just hope that the opposition will not be arguing against a budget that delivers an income tax cut for Nova Scotians and delivers a small business tax cut.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The increased spending in the first year of their mandate, Mr. Speaker, the increased spending in the second year by 7%, Mr. Speaker, and despite the talking points, we're well on our way for our third year of increase in spending. So my question to the Premier, how can Nova Scotians have any faith in the government's plan when history and evidence show that the NDP has a track record of manipulating targets to suit their own agenda?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, none of that is true. And the problem with the opposition is that although they get to ask questions every day, we do remember what they asked about yesterday or the day before or the day before that. And this is an opposition that complained bitterly about the reduction that we brought in expenses and now says that that we're spending too much.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government hasn't brought in a single reduction, Mr. Speaker. In year one, they've had increased spending by 9%, year two by 7%, and we're well on our way for increased spending next year, Mr. Speaker. Every user fee in this province is going up, Mr. Speaker, and Nova Scotians are paying more tax because they're breaking another promise to eliminate bracket creep. My question to the Premier, since yesterday, the Minister of Finance doesn't seem to understand the role of the Auditor General when he stood behind him yesterday, I would like to ask the Premier, will he make the call to the Auditor General to have someone clarify his projections to make sure they're actually accurate?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the opinion of the Auditor General is right here. I can point to it in the budget assumption schedules, Mr. Speaker. It supports what the Minister of Finance has said. And, Mr. Speaker, further, the opposition is wrong because in this budget, with the increase in the personal exemption, the people of Nova Scotia get a tax cut.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. On Monday night in this House, Mr. Speaker, the Premier was boasting about his surplus and how, for the first time in several years, there would be an actual outright reduction in the net debt of the province, as there would be a payment of $37.8 million against that debt. Well, that didn't last long, Mr. Speaker. I wouldn't clap yet. That didn't last long because just one day later, his government tabled a budget which shows that they will increase the debt in the upcoming year by 23 times that amount, by $678.9 million, a rate of $1.8 million per day for every day of the upcoming year. And so my question to the Premier is this: how can he boast about a debt reduction that will only last for 20 days because of his new budget?
Hear,
hear. Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think all Nova Scotians recognize that whenever you're able to pay down debt, that that is a good thing. We were very pleased that we were able to do that last year. The Minister of Finance has said that it was through a series of things that included some good fortune with respect to year-end adjustments from the federal government, but also from good management. And that, of course, was last year. This year, of course, the business of government has to continue. We have to continue to build schools. We have to continue to build roads. We have to continue to provide service to the people of Nova Scotia. If the Progressive Conservative leader is suggesting that we should cancel all the construction of schools and roads in this province, I'd like to know where he thinks we should start.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what I am suggesting is that the government should not do one thing on Monday and the opposite on Tuesday. That is what I am suggesting. In the budget, Mr. Speaker, the Premier and his government show that in the last 2 years, since they took office, they've already added $700 million to our total debt. It is going up, not down, as they try to tell the people of Nova Scotia. Now they're going to add $678.9 million more in 1 year. Surely that is the fastest accumulation of debt in at that short a period of time as we have ever seen. And so my, in 3 years...
Order, please. Order. Order, please. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party with your question, please.
My question to the Premier is this, Mr. Speaker. Given $1.4 billion in new debt in 3 short years, will the Premier finally admit the truth that his plan is not working and send his Finance Minister back to the drawing board?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, not only is the plan presented by the Minister of Finance working, in fact, it's working better than we perhaps had forecast. We had a very good year last year, which meant that we were able to pay down some debt. We were able to pay off all of the capital expenses for the year. This, of course, is a very good thing. I said to the leader yesterday that it amazes me when he talks about this debt, because the debt that he's talking about is the debt that the members of his caucus ran on. It was what they were committed to over the last campaign. It is the one that they thumped their chest about all around the province of Nova Scotia. It is the one they entered into an agreement with when the federal government, it's hard to believe that they can stand up and say what they say about it today.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that is the most bizarre defense of more debt that I have heard in a long time.
Ever.
But we are making progress. We're making progress here today in question period because at least the Premier is admitting to his record of debt accumulation over the last 3 years. And that is a first. That is a first in this House, Mr. Speaker. Sadly, though, by the government's own estimates, which I only hold up this far because it's not a prop, it's the government's own estimates. By their own estimates, going out to the end of 2015, this record of debt is only going to continue to go up into the foreseeable future, Mr. Speaker, with no end in sight. And so my question, my final question to the Premier, will he table a new plan that finally stops running up the credit card before it's too late?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, unlike the previous governments here, what we have done is we have put forward, in fact, the capital projects that we intend to invest in over the next year. We've also set out a road paving plan that demonstrates how we intend to go forward with that. But again, I would invite the member opposite, if he doesn't want a school built, if he doesn't want a road paved, if there are capital expenses that he thinks we shouldn't be undertaking, would he please send us a list of what those capital projects are? Because I can tell, I will make sure they get wide publication.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier and the Finance Minister have been talking about how they've been holding the line on spending. However, you look carefully at government, what government is actually doing, Mr. Speaker, has been increasing spending in every year of their mandate. About half of the government departments are going to spend more this year than it did last year, but the Finance Minister is trying to hide behind these increases through illusions and fabrications. So my question to the Premier, after hiking the HST and increasing 1,400 user fees, after leaking to the media that the Finance Minister made a two-thirds of a billion-dollar error on Monday night, why would the government continue to hide the true state of the finances from the people of Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, in fact, the things that the Leader of the Opposition say continues to be a fabrication, Mr. Speaker. But the reality is that expenses for the government are going to be flat this year. We have passed on to the DHAs, to the school boards, as he is well aware, what their budgets shall be for the upcoming year. And we've told them that they have to absorb their own wage increases. And he would know that, that the previous government, of course, negotiated rather substantial increases that continue to roll out for many years afterwards. And as I've said, these are essentially a millstone around the province's neck that was a gift from the former government.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
The Premier knows that's not true, Mr. Speaker. Even after you factor in the shell game that this government has been playing with university spending, you see that there is a continual increase in spending last year, the year before, and this year, Mr. Speaker, under the budget that was presented into this House. Mr. Speaker, that is not what this government is telling Nova Scotians. The Finance Minister has been spinning fantasies when in reality he isn't even accurate enough to catch two-thirds of a billion-dollar mistake, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, how can Nova Scotians trust a government that posted a surplus which was off the mark by two-thirds of a $1 billion one day, and they turn around and tell each Nova Scotian that they're going to have to continue to suffer with the HST and the user fee hikes his government has imposed?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the economic panel and the advice that we got from the economic experts pointed out that this province was on the track for a $1.4 billion deficit. We made a decision that we were going to deal with that in a way that made the most sense to all Nova Scotians. So we have. And I have to say, we have had some fairly good level of cooperation. And I would just point to the fact that the physicians in this province, Mr. Speaker, were gracious enough to put aside the contract that they had at 4% increase and to take 1%, which has been the rate for other labour negotiations across the province. Mr. Speaker, we haven't taken the slash and burn approach that was taken by the former Liberal government. We haven't taken the same type of Bill 68 approach that was taken by the Conservatives. In fact, Mr. Speaker, we've taken a rational, reasonable approach in order to be able to maintain services to the people of this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the real and accurate number is $1.7 billion that the Minister of Finance has added to the debt of this province, Mr. Speaker. The Premier continues to quote $1.4 billion, Mr. Speaker. That is a number that the government is using to mislead Nova Scotians so that they can increase the HST, Mr. Speaker, so they can continue to tax and spend their way to re-election. The Finance Minister has manipulated his projections, hoping that Nova Scotians would be silent while they continue to pay more as they increase 1,400 user fees the week before. Mr. Speaker, the NDP's plan is very clear. Manipulate data, present fictional forecasts, tax Nova Scotians into submission, all the while will they continue to tax and spend their way, Mr. Speaker, to re-election. My question to the Premier, when will the Premier come clean and present Nova Scotians with the real picture, financial picture, that our province is faced with?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I've said before, the real picture is that that personal income tax in this province will be lower for people this year as a result of an increase in the personal exemption. Small business tax is going down. There was a surplus last year for only the seventh time in 50 years, and estimates of expenses were lower the second year in a row, the first time in 23 years. Is that enough for the Leader of the Opposition?
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the NDP government once again reached into the pockets of Nova Scotians last week with the decision to hike 1,400 user fees by 2%. The Nickel and Dime Party has failed to provide any justification for the fee increases and has been unable to show us the exact cost for every input into each of these fees. User fees that generate anything more than cost recovery for government are not user fees at all. They're taxes on Nova Scotians. My question to the Minister of Finance. You claim these increases reflect the cost of rising inflation. So what input costs, person hours, materials, etc., have actually increased, and by how much?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to confirm to the House today that all the requirements of the Fees Act have been followed. All necessary notices have been filed. The notices were filed on the same day that the Order in Council was published. I think the real question here, Mr. Speaker, is it the position of the Liberal Party that the increase in cost of government should be put on the general tax base, or do they share our view, which is that the people using the services should pay for them?
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Well, the reality is, Mr. Speaker, that they have placed an extra burden on the user fees, more than the cost of delivery. And in April 2009 edition of the Chronicle Herald, speaking on the issue of user fee increases, the then leader of the opposition NDP, the current Premier, said he hadn't seen any explanation for the increases and is quoted as saying, the cost of the individual service might not have gone up. In fact, it's possible it may have gone down, so it's a tax. Mr. Speaker, civil servants have agreed to only a 1% wage increase, yet a GED certificate has been hiked by 2%. This sounds like a tax to Nova Scotians, and the Finance Minister did what he knows best. He hiked yet another tax. The NDP making life more expensive for Nova Scotia families. My question to the Minister, will he tell Nova Scotians the exact cost to produce a GED certificate, how much it went up, and why?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I notice the member opposite is very carefully evading the real question here. And that question is that when you have something like a GED certificate, Mr. Speaker, should the cost of that be paid for out of the general tax base so that everybody pays for it, or should it be paid for by the person who's actually receiving the GED certificate, Mr. Speaker? In an ideal world, there would be no user fees, there would be no taxes. We would be able to offer a first-class healthcare system, a first-class education system at no cost to anybody, Mr. Speaker. But in the real world, where we do all live, there are costs, Mr. Speaker. And for those matters, Mr. Speaker, we decided that it was better for the cost to be borne by the people actually using the service rather than doing what the Liberals would do, which is add the cost to the general tax base.
The Honourable Member for King's West. On your final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. We had expected this finance minister would do a comprehensive tax review, and he'd know exactly where to place taxes in this province. Mr. Speaker, only 2 years ago, the Premier stood in this House and said, I quote, they call them user fees, but they're taxes. That's what they are, end of quote. Yet on Friday afternoon, outside of the House, with no debate, and while the federal government was about to fall on a non-confidence vote, he sent notice that the NDP was going to make life more expensive for Nova Scotians and hike 1,400 fees. Most disappointing is that no one over on that side of the House can tell Nova Scotians exactly how much it costs to deliver any of these services. My question to the Finance Minister, will you table in the House today how much each fee costs to deliver, the breakdown of these costs, and how much each input increase, or do you expect us to trust you?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said in a previous answer, all required notices have been filed. There is another point the member made that I do want to address, Mr. Speaker, and that is the timing of the release. Now, the Order in Council was signed at about noon on the particular day to which the member refers, and the government news release went out within the following 2 hours. It is disrespectful to Her Honour the Lieutenant Governor to notify the public, Mr. Speaker, before the Order in Council is signed. Now, Mr. Speaker, They may
order,
be
order, please. Order. 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 Order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Finance has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is an absolute convention of government that government news releases do not go out before the order in council is signed by Her Honoured Lieutenant Governor. They may not respect that tradition, but we do.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Now, a year ago, he said, we will reduce the civil service by 10% by 2013. At the time, estimates showed that there were 10,813 civil service positions. So he was promising to reduce about 1,000 positions. How did the minister manage to reduce the number of positions by about 650 people in the past fiscal year just ended?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I refer that to the Minister for the Public Service Commission.
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, they weren't reduced. Mr. Speaker, if they would take the time and read the documents that was presented to them, they'd realize what the actual numbers are. Do the actuals, not the estimates. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness, well, on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker.
Order, order, please. Order, order. The Honourable Member for Inverness on your first supplementary, please.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I'm glad the Minister has raised that point. If the Liberals would please be quiet and share the House with other members, we'd be able to conduct question period. Now,
the Honourable Member for Inverness on your first supplementary, please.
Mr. Speaker, it'd be nice if the Liberals would let the voice from Inverness speak in this House. The point I'm trying to make today, Mr. Speaker, is this government's numbers are all over the place. One minute they're up, the next minute they're down. Now, their numbers showed they were decreasing the FTE count. And the numbers are up and down, much like their surplus they reported the other night. There was about a $700 million difference. Now this year, it's indicated within the estimates that the positions are up by about 600. This would indicate no progress on the government's commitment. Can the minister provide this House with some reassurance that he is on track with the government's commitment?
Order, order, please. Questions about the budget are not allowed, so I would ask the Honourable Member to rise and third supplementary, on his final supplementary.
Speaker, those are the numbers, and the numbers
order,
don't lie.
Order, please. Order. Order, please. I'm sorry, but the Premier doesn't tell the Speaker anything in this legislature. The Premier does not tell this Speaker anything. If you don't like it, there's the door. You don't like it, there's the door. The Honourable Member for Inverness has the floor.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'll move
final
to my
supplementary.
Third question. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, a couple of weeks ago, the Public Service Commission told us at Public Accounts that approximately 600 people leave government each year on their own accord, through retirements, through taking a job elsewhere. So none of these people are actually hurt by lost employment. Now, the minister has said that his government can operate a civil service with 1,000 fewer people by 2013. The numbers show that his government has made no progress towards that commitment. When will the minister give Nova Scotians something more than words? And how about some numbers, Mr. Speaker, where estimates actually match actuals to show that they're doing something about reducing the cost of government?
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll rather wait till tomorrow. I'll correct myself today. I should have used estimates instead of actuals, Mr. Speaker, and I apologize. But it's in the budget documents. If you want to read them, they're there. It's clearly, it started off with 10,935, going to 10,813 and down to 10,713.
Order, order, please. It's in the budget, please. I'd ask the Honourable Member to sit down. Okay. Thank you. The Honourable Member for Colchester North, please.
Mr.
honourable member for Colchester North, please.
You're not going to tell me to sit down, are you? Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Education. Reading Recovery is a highly structured, research-based program designed to assist early readers. The Early Intervention Program was introduced into schools in Nova Scotia with the support of the Department of Education in 1995. It has proven to be a huge success in the public schools. So my question to the minister is this. Will the minister share with classroom teachers and parents and all members of this House who advised that Reading Recovery should be discontinued?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for the question. This was a budget item that was put on the table along with many other things for me to consider when we were building the budget. And even though it ended up in a budget decision, it was at advice from different experts in the field that it would be much better to be able to offer a program that was more encompassing, more flexible, and more equitable. So even though it ended up in the budget, the decision is actually so that we can meet the needs of more of our children in the province, and making sure that we catch them earlier and support them as they travel through their school.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your first supplementary, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm interested to hear the minister say that it was a budget item. I'm also interested to hear that originally it was a $7 million item that was going to be a savings to the province. They're now talking the new program will be $5 million. That's a $2 million difference, and in a huge education budget, what is $2 million when the lives and the progress of kids are online? So my question to the minister is this. What experts, who were the experts who did give the minister that advice?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the question. In all due respect, it is that is a question that I don't feel that I should be answering in terms of the information that was given to me is irrelevant. In that I have a great deep understanding of the program and having the experience of watching children in the program. I have nothing against the program per se, but the problem is it was not equitable, not flexible, very rigid. We were leaving children out, and this government wants to meet the needs of more children. That is the reason why we are changing the program. Mr. Speaker, I would like to be able to finish this. Changing the program so that we're going to have another approach, catching children early and carry them through with the support they need. This program was a piece of literacy. We want to make it a bigger piece to capture more of our children that need support.
The Honourable Member from Colchester North on your final supplement.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Supplement. We know that over 23,000 grade 1 students have benefited from this intense one-on-one early intervention program. In fact, out of 153 reading programs, as the minister would know, research recently in the U.S., Reading Recovery was identified as the best. So my question to the minister is this. Will the replacement program be able to stand up to the test of being the best out of 153 others?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. One research placed it as number one. There are other research organizations that would not agree with that. So I guess it's depending on which research you're looking at. Reading Recovery is a program that I am not going to argue with, but unfortunately it does not meet the needs of the children that we have. We have more children that are falling outside of what Reading Recovery is able to pick up on. And unfortunately, the evidence that we have in place, 57% of this, provincially, 57% of those children that had Reading Recovery by the time they made it to grade 3 are not meeting the expectations that we would like for them to have. We need a program that is going to capture more people and is going to be more successful. This is an approach that we are going to be putting in place, the framework, and we'll be within the coming weeks we'll be able to share it with Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations. As the minister may know, or actually he may not know, I shouldn't assume, Mr. Speaker, the Atlantic Mayors Conference is meeting in Halifax today. He may not know that because they may not have told him, because I don't think they're speaking to that minister right now, to be honest, Mr. Speaker, after what he did to them a few weeks ago. But they are meeting here in Halifax. Even if he's not there, even if they didn't tell him, I'm sure his ears are burning, because I suspect they're talking about the minister and what he did to our towns and municipalities a few weeks ago. Mr. Speaker, my question is this. In 2009, the minister of that time, the NDP minister, promised and announced a towns task force to deal with the long-term sustainability of our towns. Well, now, Mr. Speaker, in April of 2011, we're still waiting for that towns task force. And so my question to the minister is this. Is this towns task force, which has not yet met on such an important matter, another example of an NDP broken promise, or is he afraid to meet with them after what he did to our towns a few weeks ago?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want the member opposite to be aware that I've had very good correspondence, dialogue, consultation with the UNSM and with municipalities, and actually have started my tour around the province to meet the wardens, mayors, and municipal units. The town task force is still a go, I must say. Actually, some municipalities have contributed to that. It's our commitment to see that through, and actually I think many of the municipalities are very keen to that initiative, and we intend to follow through with a previous commitment to do that.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, on your first supplementary, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sad to say this, but only in the NDP fantasy land is a task force that has not met in 2 years considered to be still a go. But having said that, the minister said at the time that he broke his agreement with the municipalities, quote, we are not going to download our financial problems onto municipalities. Well, I have to tell you, Mr. Speaker, and through you to the minister, that municipal officials, including Annapolis County Warden Reg Ritchie, would beg to disagree. Mr. Ritchie told the Annapolis County Spectator, and I quote, that it's not fair that our residents have to pay the price for the province's downloading of costs. And of course, the warden is correct. And so my question to the minister is this. Why does this government continue to force its financial hardships onto the backs of others, including, in this case, our municipalities?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Days of me becoming the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, Municipal Relations, I met with the President of the UNSM. His comment to me was, we expect some things will change. They were looking at the world as we saw it, that we were asking for commitments from education and other sectors. Mr. Speaker, I did make one commitment to him, that if it was possible to give the 1 year notice before we made any changes that might negatively impact municipalities financially, which was the thing he said, can we keep the 1 year notice? I said, as much as is possible for me to do that, that I would try to do that. That was the one thing that I committed to do with him. And Mr. Speaker, not only is that the one thing I delivered, but we delivered much more to the municipalities. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this has been a very productive question period. We're actually learning some things from the government today. One of the things that I think we've just learned from the minister is you should never say to an NDP minister, we expect some things to change, because you can be sure you're about to get your pockets picked if that's what you say to a minister of this government, and it's our municipalities that have learned that lesson in this case. And so my final question to the minister is this. Will he agree that as property taxes go up, as they inevitably will as a result of his actions as minister, that this amounts to another hidden NDP tax increase in the wings?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Look, Mr. Speaker, I have to say that the municipalities, I think, have been quite reasonable on this. The member opposite should remember yesterday's question period, since I would have thought it was quite productive, since I indicated the clause in the MOU that showed that the municipalities had agreed that if the province could not meet that financial commitment, that they wouldn't have to. That's basically, it was based on appropriation. Mr. Speaker, the province signed an MOU, not an IOU.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And before I ask my question, could I ask the minister to table the documents that she referred to regarding other research that included reading recovery? Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Education is this. Teachers from across this province have been asked to work with the minister to develop a replacement for reading recovery. So my question to the minister is this. Will this replacement be both research and evidence-based?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and yes.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Programs like Reading Recovery and other literacy intervention programs have taken years to develop, to research, to develop, to pilot, to implement, and to assess. We're now 5 months away from the opening of school in September 2011. Teachers have been working to develop a program that will replace Reading Recovery. So my question to the minister is this. Will the minister please explain how she plans to research, develop, pilot, implement, and assess a new program before September?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. And I think that I would like to just to clarify that Reading Recovery is a program. It is one piece of a balanced literacy initiative. Thank you. Now, what I would like to say, not using the word program, we're looking at a new approach. Now, I know that the member opposite knows that the members, the staff within the Department of Education have the expertise to make the recommendations without any consultation. We could have been able to put something in place quickly. But one of the things that this province has is diversity among our school boards. And also, this government is very clear that we want to collaborate with our partners. So instead of the department putting another approach in place to encompass reaching more children to have success with literacy, we ask members, their lead teachers from the different school boards to come together so that we could make sure that we were planning an approach that we'd be going out into the school boards based on best practice, research, evidence-based. And I have to say that the members that came in from across the province to work, we're ending up with an approach that is going to be a better approach than we've ever had, because it is something that we worked on together. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do understand Reading Recovery fairly well. I do understand that there are experts at the department. I do understand that there are teachers in the classroom who know a lot about literacy programs. And I do understand they've been called in and they're extremely frustrated. So in my correspondence to the minister, I did write to the minister on February 24th. I will table that letter. And the minister did respond to my correspondence. I appreciate that. I asked the minister, and my quote was, would she reconsider the decision to discontinue Reading Recovery until such time as a replacement program that produces the same results or better can be found? So my question to the minister is this. What comfort do parents and teachers have that a program that's pulled together in less than 5 months, ready for implementation, will give the same outcomes as Reading Recovery or any research evidence-based program?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, and I must say that I am looking forward to a program that is going to meet more than 43% of the children that have had success with reading recovery. And those were a few children, the lowest 20% of the grade one classroom. We're looking at broadening that out to capture children early so that they have success with literacy. Having the ability to be a good reader is a key component of being successful in life, and we want to make sure that we're getting our children early and that we're able to support them throughout. Reading recovery was not meeting enough of the needs of the children that we have in our school.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, we know that the last-ditch efforts to save Holy Angels High School have fallen on deaf ears. It's unfortunate this government has chosen other priorities in the spring budget, like growing the size of bureaucracy, rather than saving Holy Angels High and its specialized programs that were so important to the students who chose to go there. Now, Mr. Speaker, as the students, teachers, and parents prepare to close this chapter and transition to new schools, they need clarity in order to start to heal from the turmoil and chaos they've been put through. Mr. Speaker, through you, my question to the Minister of Education is, what will the Minister do to ease the anxiety of parents and students, and what process will be used to determine which students get to go to which high schools?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And with respect to the member opposite, that's not a question that I can answer. That is a question that if he would be able to ask the school board, and I'm quite sure that they will be able to give him great comfort in the transition that they are putting in place for our 300 young women, well, I would imagine maybe 200 young women that will be transitioning back within their community schools. But I wouldn't be able to answer that, but I know that the school board is working on making sure that that goes as seamlessly as possible.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And you'd think that the department would be anxious to know that the children were looked after as well. Right. Mr. Speaker, the students at Holy Angels chose to travel from communities all around Cape Breton Island to the all-girls school for its program, culture, and learning environment. Now they're fearful that their right to choose which high school they want to attend will be taken away. Sources say that one high school principal in the area has been very vocal that all students from Holy Angels High should be required to go to his school. Some people involved feel the principal sees this as an opportunity to raise his student numbers rather than what's best for these girls. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister is, will the minister put the students' interests first and encourage the school board to allow the students to choose which school they want to attend?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. I want to say that all students in our province are important to this government and to this minister. And there are processes in place at the school board that I will not interfere with. It is up to the school board to make those decisions, and I know they will make good decisions with each of the students.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, proof that this government has left the girls and Holy Angels hanging out to dry. Mr. Speaker, some of the teachers at Holy Angels High are fearful they'll not find work for the fall. It's especially concerning for those ones who have been teaching highly specialized programs that are the modern design of the traditional teaching practices pioneered by the Sisters over a century ago. So my final supplementary, Mr. Speaker, through you to the minister is, what will be done to help teachers find meaningful employment in their specialized teaching fields so they're not just another percentage point on the growing unemployment rate in Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm finding it a little unfair for the member opposite to ask me questions which need to be directed to the school board. And I know the school board will be able to answer those questions. The school board has processes in place, and the collective agreement will kick in. I want to say that the students at that school will have a very good education and a good experience in other schools. Unfortunately, the sisters decided that they were not going to lease the building anymore, and we have to respect their decision. I feel very badly that some of our young people in Cape Breton will have to go to, will have a little bit of a disruption in their schooling, but we did everything that we could, but we have to be respectful of, one, the process, and we have to be respectful of the decision that the sisters made.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question today is also for the Minister of Education, and it involves the same topic as the previous member brought up to the Minister. And this particular question does not involve the school board, it involves the government of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, the NDP government has not stepped in to buy Holy Angels High School. This school is known for the high academic achievements of its students and is the only public school of its kind east of Montreal. And Mr. Speaker, the Premier in his place in this House killed any thought of the government buying Holy Angels High School and keeping it open. Instead, what we're witnessing now is the spectacle of parents in the Sydney and area running around the community trying to get a private citizen, any private citizen, to buy the school so it can be retained by the school board as an all-girls high school. How shameful is that, Mr. Speaker, in a public school system where the parents of these children who are going to that school have to go around the community trying to get a private sector person to buy a school? My question to the minister, will you reconsider your decision to buy Holy Angels?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. No.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South.
Well, at least, Mr. Speaker, she didn't blame the school board. The blame rests with the government. The government has chosen to abandon Holy Angels, the only all-girls high school. The government could have bought that school, Mr. Speaker, for $750,000. And after the finance minister and the premier standing in their place here in the last few days and telling Nova Scotians what a wonderful surplus we had, they can't find $750,000 to keep the girls in Holy Angels High in a school of their own. Now, Mr. Speaker, that to me is shameful. That tells me that this government is not concerning itself with the provision of quality education in an all-girls high school in Sydney. My question, to the Minister of Education, why has your government decided to abandon the all-girls high school at Holy Angels in Sydney?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to say that this government did work with the school board, and they looked at many options around Holy Angels. And I know that there was a committee struck, and that the deputy met with them on a number of occasions, and we offered extra money around the lease situation. But the school board they're the ones that decide which schools are presented to the government for our capital plan. And this is not a blame game, Mr. Speaker. We have got to realize that we have to respect those young women as they go into our different schools to support them. And let's stop talking about something that we have now no control over. We need to respect the sisters and the decision that they've made.
For Cape Breton South.
Speaker, it's got nothing to do with the decision of the sisters not to lease the school. It's got everything to do with the government abandoning the concept of an all-girls high school east of Montreal, a public school. That's what this is all about. And it's not a school board problem. The demise of Holy Angels is the responsibility of this government. This government has caused the demise of Holy Angels because of its refusal to buy the school. You know, Madam Minister, that the school board cannot buy capital assets. It has to be the government of the day to purchase those assets. And I'm asking you again, for the people of Cape Breton who depend on Holy Angels to keep operating, to the people who want to keep going in that school of excellence, will you change your mind and buy that school for $750,000 and keep those students in an all-girls high school in Sydney?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. The young women of Holy Angels High have had enough turmoil, and they know that the decision has been made. And the school board is already making plans around where they're being relocated. Mr. Speaker, really, we need to be able to support the young women as they make their transition to make sure that they're successful in that transition. And this issue, Mr. Speaker, is something that we need to move on and make sure that we are providing education for those girls and other schools in their communities. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. As the Minister may recall, last fall, the Minister of Health and Wellness, along with her provincial counterparts, urged the federal government to fund clinical trials for the MS Liberation treatment. To date, the federal government has failed to act. As a result, we have a patchwork of activity happening across the country. Saskatchewan is funding their own clinical trial. New Brunswick provides support for patients traveling out of country for treatment. Newfoundland funded MRIs for patients traveling abroad and tracking patients. And yesterday, Manitoba joined the cause by announcing it will be joining Saskatchewan in funding clinical trials. My question to the minister is, can the minister update the House as to what discussions she has had with her counterparts with regard to participation in MS clinical trials?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, currently in this country, there are no clinical trials underway in any province. However, there are seven pieces of research happening throughout North America that an expert scientific panel put together by the federal government under the auspices of CIHI are watching very carefully and monitoring. And this research from these seven projects is the research that will form the basis of whether or not clinical trials will proceed and on what basis. And we're awaiting the outcome of the results of those seven studies.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the absence of leadership at the federal level, provinces are stepping up to the plate to assist MS patients in their respective jurisdictions. Nova Scotia MS patients deserve the same consideration from their own government. The Manitoba NDP government announced yesterday they will fund a clinical trial in their province. They've put $5 million aside to start that. And they've also invited other provinces to join in on a multi-site research proposal on MS liberation treatment. My question to the minister is, will this NDP government consider the request being issued by the NDP government in Manitoba and join in a multi-site clinical trial for the MS liberation treatment?
The Honourable Minister for Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have said, and I will say again here today, that when the scientific and medical experts recommend that clinical trials proceed, our province will certainly be happy to participate in them.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government talks about evidence. Good, solid evidence in medicine is gathered by participating in a clinical trial. Last fall, the Premier stated in the House that he is prepared to participate in national clinical trials. And Mr. Speaker, I'd like to just table that while we're here. The Premier in Manitoba, Premier Selinger's call yesterday was the beginning of what will no doubt become a national clinical trial. My question this time is to the Premier, Mr. Speaker. Is the Premier willing to stand by his words last fall and ensure Nova Scotia participates in a clinical trial for MS liberation treatment?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I said what I meant. I mean what I said.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Preston.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my questions today will be for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Affairs. Mr. Speaker, to quote a former opposition critic who now sits as Finance Minister, this government is obsessed with appearances rather than realities. And that was State Enhancer, April 23rd, 2001. That statement has never been more appropriate than it is today. This is a government that writes friction as an excuse to hike taxes. This is a government that which tries to rewrite history in order to justify reneging on agreements.
Didn't well.
And this government has tried to use clever wordsmithing to cover up their true intentions. My question is, how much more property taxes will Nova Scotians be forced to pay now that you're downloading your responsibilities on the municipal councils?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Well, a couple of things there, Mr. Speaker. We're not downloading on municipalities. We're stopping the uploading to the province. The opposition, Mr. Speaker, doesn't have to like the answer. They could listen to it. The municipalities. Have been budgeting these costs into their budgets over the past few years, so there will be no increase in taxes for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Preston on your first supplementary.
I trust the Minister is going to guarantee that, and if there is a tax increase, that he will cover them. Somehow or other, I don't believe that. Mr. Speaker, not only is this government failing to address the problems throughout the municipalities in Nova Scotia, they're going to download provincial commitments onto these communities and to these people. This minister knows full well that he stood against provincial downloading when he was in opposition. Yet here we are again, another broken NDP promise and another NDP tax hike on the horizon. And when Nova Scotia's property taxes go up, and the NDP do exactly what the finance minister tried to do yesterday, wash his hands and claim, not me. My question is to the minister, when property taxes go up across the province because of their recklessness, will you and the finance minister apologize for Nova Scotia for yet another NDP broken promise and tax hike?
Well, the Honourable Minister for Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Mr. Speaker, this government didn't break any promises, and I certainly know that this minister hasn't. And the member opposite, if he remembers question period yesterday and looks unanswered, he will see that there was a clause in the MOU that said the agreement was based on appropriation, which I'm thinking he would understand means that if the government could not afford it, that was an out clause, really, for the government in this regard. Mr. Speaker, he would know from the finances left to us by the previous administration who entered the agreement that was not a sustainable agreement. I cannot guarantee to the member that municipalities will not raise taxes, but what I can tell them is they will not raise taxes because of any change in the MOU.
The Honourable Member from Preston on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, all municipalities will be impacted when the province downloads the responsibilities as they're doing now. The NDP might be able to invent surpluses one day and invent deficits the next day, but Nova Scotians know that their taxes are going up. 2% higher GST, 1,400 higher user fees, more and more income being taxed at a higher and higher rate due to bracket creep. And Nova Scotians can expect higher property taxes thanks to the NDP. My question is, how is downloading your commitments onto the municipality a better deal for anyone in Nova Scotia other than the Minister of Finance?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'll try to make a couple of points, which I'm pretty sure will not resonate with the member. The government is not downloading onto the municipalities. It is stopping the uploading to the government, Mr. Speaker. The municipalities are actually better off under these adjustments than they were prior to the MOU, perhaps not as well off as they might have hoped if the MOU had been completed, but they're better off than they were prior to the MOU. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford, Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the government announced changes to the student assistance plan, and that was a good thing. But, and you knew that was coming. There's There's no indication that the government is going to help students who want to pursue a second degree or a professional or graduate degree. So my question is to the Minister of Advanced Education. What new assistance are you giving graduate or professional students?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was very pleased to meet with student leaders yesterday and also at an event last evening. And their almost unanimous reaction to the investment of the government into making university education more affordable was very, very positive. And we're very pleased to move that forward. As everyone in this House recognizes, a university education is a great investment, and it continues to pay off through an individual's lifetime. And certainly there are some programs and degrees that enable students to earn more in their future careers. Certainly we needed to start and focus on those who, we wanted to make it affordable for those who had most need, and that's what we've accomplished to an improved extent, and we're very, very excited about this breakthrough. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is not the only way the government is neglecting students who are continuing their studies. Undergrad tuition will be limited to increases of not more than 3%, but it appears tuition in professional programs will be able to rise with no limits. So my question is, why?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We took a very balanced, measured approach. We replaced the $30 million that was required to continue the bursary for students in this province. We capped tuition at 3%, and we improved significantly the student assistance package. I think students got a very good break, and they certainly realize that. Can we do more in the future? Hopefully. But my heavens, this is in this fiscal reality, making these improvements was a tremendous break for everyone, and we're very pleased to be able to support the youth of our province.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I take from the Minister's comments that what we're going to do is penalize our brightest and our best, the kids who are going on to do master's degree and professional's degrees, by not giving them any assurance what their tuition is going to be. They don't know where their tuition is going at this point. Well, they only know it's going to go up. And Mr. Speaker, the people who want to pursue professional or graduate degrees will improve our economy for the better. You know, that educated workforce that we all keep hearing about. Students should not be limited to one degree based on socioeconomic status. Will the minister commit to treating all students fairly and reconsider her approach to professional and graduate students?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our first priority is giving university students or the citizens of Nova Scotia the opportunity to at least get their first degree in an affordable manner. And we've certainly done that. With the graduate and professional programs, certainly the citizens of this province subsidize those programs considerably. That is a tremendous contribution from the citizens. We need to make sure that we have sustainable and quality education system in our post-secondary system, and this approach is one way to maintain that sustainability. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. According to the 2009 Program for International Student Assessment, released December 7, 2010, 15-year-olds in Nova Scotia were ranked 13th in the world in reading, a significant achievement from the past, since they were 10 years ago. The study measured students from 65 countries and included the 10 Canadian provinces. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Education, can she explain why she's willing to risk the significant progress and achievements made in literacy in our province by eliminating the Reading Recovery Program without a clear strategy or goals on how she plans to keep children at the lowest literacy rates from falling through the cracks?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for reminding people in Nova Scotia how well we are doing it with our education system. It's a world-class system, and all Nova Scotians should be very proud of that. I want to say that the reason that reading recovery is being replaced with a new approach is that we need to make sure that we meet the needs of more children, and so we are going to be making sure that we are going to be having early intervention. We need to catch our children early if they need support learning how to read. So, therefore, Mr. Speaker, the lowest 20% of a class in reading recovery that would be picked up, those are the very few numbers. We're looking at making sure that we are going to be able to even have better scores because we're picking up kids younger and earlier.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we know the research-based reading recovery program has been around since the 1970s. The program is ranked number one out of 153 reading programs in the U.S. and has proven to be very successful in bridging the literacy gap between a classroom's most struggling students and their peers. Through you to the Minister, how in 5 months will you research, develop, test, train, and implement a new reading program that can even come close to comparing with reading recovery, and what that real cost of the program, including the loss of human capital already invested in the reading recovery program?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The approach that we are taking is to make sure that we are using the best practices in terms of literacy development. We have over 600 trained reading recovery teachers in the province of Nova Scotia that know those best practices. Learning how to read comes with a lot of research. We know what children need to be successful in reading. And I am looking forward to, in another couple of weeks, to be able to share with my members opposite the approach that we are taking. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Well, I thank the Minister for that answer and wanting to provide the information to us. She said she wants to expand the program to include students from grade 1 to grade 3 and that different boards have different needs from primary to grade 3. Thank you. How does she plan to monitor this piecemeal program if it's going to be different in different boards and it's going to be such a broader piece to make sure that students are not falling farther behind and ending up with IPPs or individual program plans, which closes doors on them when they get to higher grades and will further cost the government in the future when it could have been prevented in the first place?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the member opposite, who I know has a deep understanding of reading recovery. Reading recovery was only meeting the needs of very few students, the lowest 20% of a grade 1 class, and not all of that 20%. And we are now able to prove that only 43% of the children, by the time they get to grade 3, are attaining the goals that we want them to have. So we are going to make sure that this program gets children early, and evidence-based, research-based tells us earlier is better. We don't want to wait to grade 1 to catch a few. We want to get in early and catch more children so we can support them with their reading so they can be successful. And thank you very much for the question, member opposite.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. I'm sure the Minister is aware that the current residential electricity price is 11.8 cents a kilowatt hour, and of course to that we add the base rate and the NDP electricity tax. Mr. Speaker, we all know that power rates will continue to rise with the reliance on fossil fuels and the costs associated with the renewables. Mr. Speaker, would the Minister please tell this House what price he believes Nova Scotians should expect electricity prices to level off at?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question.
We're all in Nova Scotia. We're on the leading edge of some renewable electricity initiatives, and but the rates actually are set by the Utility and Review Board. So actually the UARB is meeting right this week on the ComFit program, as the Honourable Member would know. And so really that's their responsibility, and only time will tell what rates they set.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm surprised to hear the Minister of Energy say that it's not his responsibility, since the Premier and the Minister of Finance in opposition repeatedly said it was the government's responsibility to ensure fair power rates for Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Energy mentioned the ComFit hearing, and let me just speak to that briefly. You know, we all agree that renewable energy is part of the solution. However, he's constantly deferring to the Utility and Review Board, just as this government is. And as he noted, one such deferral goes on today with the feed-in tariff hearings, a program which excludes solar and geothermal because the NDP said it would be too expensive. And yet, we have rates proposed at that hearing today which are six times what Nova Scotians pay for electricity now. Mr. Speaker, the legislation on the feed-in tariff does not allow the board to consider affordability or even the economics of various projects. So, question, Mr. Speaker, please. Does the minister still support the review board setting feed-in tariff rates at levels which could prove unaffordable to Nova Scotia residents and businesses?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The UARB has a job to do. That's certainly true. And, you know, they have the expertise. They bring in knowledgeable experts on helping to determine the rates. But really, the ComFit is really all about communities. It's ComFit, Community Feed-in Tariff is what it stands for. And it allows farmers groups, it allows municipalities, it allows small businesses and community groups to get involved, and it helps create jobs in our local communities, and the spin-off, whether you know it's tidal or in-stream or wind or whatever process are moving forward. So there's a lot of potential in it. It's going to help stabilize energy prices over time, and we're saying let the UARB fully investigate it and bring in the proper rates.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, and I might congratulate the Minister for his early learning of avoiding and not answering the questions that are embarrassing for his government, as he's done so ably today. Mr. Speaker, he says community. I wonder how many people in his party consider Lockheed Martin and some of those large ones community, because they obviously qualify. Mr. Speaker, the URB has stated, and the chair of the URB has stated, that they can only consider the items that this government has put before them and only consider those conditions. So because the NDP didn't include affordability or economics in it, they can't consider it. So, Mr. Speaker, the Premier said, the now Premier said in opposition, and I quote, increases will make life less affordable for every family in the province, and these increases will affect jobs as Nova Scotia industries struggle to remain competitive.
Please.
That hasn't changed. So, Mr. Speaker, given my question is, given that what we now see at the review board hearings and the fact that the NDP legislation did not factor in affordability and project economics, will the Minister of Energy tell us why his government no longer cares about affordability or competitiveness?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the ComFit program is really for small community groups to develop energy projects in the province. If larger companies like Lockheed Martin want to investigate, it's under the IPP program, as the Honourable Member should be aware. But really, we're all about bringing the best possible rates on electricity to Nova Scotians, cleaner, greener energy, and a more stable future. And that's why we took the HST off of electricity to begin with.
The Honourable Member from Halifax, Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. Earlier this week, the Canadian Diabetes Association issued another warning call to government that diabetes is at epidemic proportions, and failing to respond will impact future generations and severely threaten the sustainability of our healthcare system. Nova Scotia is definitely being swept up in this epidemic. The report titled Canada at the Tipping Point, Charting a New Path, indicates that Nova Scotia ranks close to the top when it comes to diabetes prevalence, but very near the bottom when it comes to approving drugs and devices to better manage the disease.
I think we would all agree, Mr. Speaker, that making improvements so we can reverse these rankings will not only benefit those with diabetes, it will go a long way to curbing the rising costs of health care. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister is, what plan does the Minister have to ensure Nova Scotia does a better job at managing diabetes?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for an excellent question, Mr. Speaker. Our Better Care Sooner plan will contribute to improvements in chronic disease management. That's the whole point of having good primary care teams available in the communities, readily accessible to people, so that they can get to see them before conditions deteriorate to the point that they need more intense interventions in acute care settings. Additionally, Mr. Speaker, it is our plan, and the member will have seen this in the budget, to have a chronic disease management done in this year. Some money has been allocated for that. And of course, our childhood obesity strategy will be looking at the health of children who are increasingly confronted with the disease of diabetes.
The Honourable Member from Halifax, Caton Park, on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, I think that it's important that under the Chronic Disease Management Plan, the incidence of diabetes be looked at specifically and the benefit of the insulin pumps be looked at. I think that that's a key component. Mr. Speaker, it's estimated the hospitalization costs related to diabetes in Nova Scotia cost our healthcare system $38 million a year, and the total cost of managing diabetes is much higher. If we're able to prevent hospitalizations through better disease management, we're going to save the healthcare system money. My question to the Minister is, can the Minister please confirm whether she has been made aware of any plans in her own department to fund insulin pumps, starting with children under the age of 18?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I know we'll have an opportunity to debate this further with a bit more detail following question period, and I'm looking forward to participating in that. But Mr. Speaker, there are many things that we can do to improve the management of diabetes, and we will be looking at all of those various components as we work on the childhood obesity strategy, and I will be happy to share those with those initiatives with members when we have fully developed those initiatives.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Minister is talking about the obesity strategy, and that is one measure of prevention, but we're talking about management of the disease, and not all diabetics have any problem with obesity, so we have to be careful not to lump those two things together. Mr. Speaker, in Nova Scotia, we have got a diabetic care program, which provides a network of diabetic care centres across the province and would provide an excellent platform for implementing an insulin pump program. In fact, we're in an enviable position compared to other provinces in this regard. So my question to the Minister is, when will the Minister commit to the creation of a diabetic management plan in Nova Scotia, which would include the provision of insulin pumps?
Order, order, please. I would remind all members during question period that all electronic devices are to be turned off at all times, and I'd appreciate if everybody would attain to those rules, please. Thank you. The Honourable Minister for Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, with respect to insulin pumps, Nova Scotia is one of probably five or six provinces that do not provide coverage for insulin pumps. There are right now a very small number of our provinces, our larger provinces, that have some coverage, but they don't have universal coverage. They have small programs, and we certainly are monitoring the impact in those provinces off those programs. And if the honourable member has any information that indicates that there are cost savings, that it does result in fewer hospitalizations, I'd be very interested in seeing that information, because as of yet, my understanding is that information has not been generated by the provinces that in fact do have the insulin pumps.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. As you know, the Bayplex Recreation Centre in Glace Bay is the home base of my community. For some time now, representatives of the Bayplex have been lobbying all levels of government for funding for its geothermal energy retrofit project. The federal government has committed its share of funding, Mr. Speaker. The municipality has also committed to a portion of the funding. So my question to the minister, will the provincial government commit to funding the Bayplex geothermal project?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. I do believe I received a letter from you within the recent past and asking about this project. Every year, our program under Efficiency Nova Scotia looks at a number of rinks and other projects around the province, and each zone was managed at that time. And this year, I think it was HRM and Hants County that were in the program, and another year it'll be another area of the province. So, you know, it'll be considered in due course.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This project is much more than a simple rink project. It has many other angles and points that I think have to be taken into account. It's certainly a pioneering initiative that could serve as a benchmark for geothermal capabilities in this province. And everything hinges on the provincial government's commitment financially. Since the NDP had told Nova Scotians this week that they have the skill and intelligence to run a surplus of $447 million, I think the people of Glace Bay would love this skill and intelligence applied to our community project. So my question to the Minister of Energy, given the great financial windfall the government has spent the last few days talking about, would the minister support my argument that a project involving renewable energies in a struggling economic region should land high on the government's priority list?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, we're all interested in saving dollars in renewable energy is the cleaner, greener way to go. And we've got a number of good programs originally under Conserve Nova Scotia, but as of the 1st of April now under Efficiency Nova Scotia. And as that new entity moves forward, there will be a number of new initiatives looked at, and certainly your geothermal project in Glace Bay. It sounds interesting. I'd certainly be interested in getting more information on it.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Bayplex geothermal retrofit is certainly in line with the government's mandate. It capitalizes on a renewable resource. It allows the government to maximize federal investment. Okay. It supports and promotes healthy, active lifestyles and recreation. It allows a community nonprofit organization to become sustainable as this project pays for itself in 10 years. Good. It's a small investment relative to the return, and it shows a community that the provincial government has not forgotten about them. So my question to the minister, I just listed 7 reasons why the government should support the Bayplex geothermal project. Please tell me 1 reason why the government shouldn't.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, your project sounds interesting, and Efficiency Nova Scotia, as you know, is an arm's-length organization to government, and certainly I'd be interested in getting more information personally, but I also suggest that you bring it directly to Efficiency Nova Scotia. Here.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage. Hey! Mr. Speaker, the Premier, with great fanfare, has created this new department, and the Minister has announced plans to create Arts Nova Scotia. which has been well received across the province. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, when the minister met with the arts community to reveal these plans, did he bother to tell them he was about to cut arts funding for the second time in 2 years?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member opposite for the question today. Of course, I'm not going to get into details about numbers on the budget because it is my first question, and I don't want you as Speaker to have me take my place, Mr. Speaker.
Good move. Good move.
But I know
I'd say that was a good move.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. But the creation of the Department of Communities, Culture and Heritage, Mr. Speaker, broadens the focus of protecting and celebrating the Nova Scotia diverse culture and heritage that we have in the province, Mr. Speaker, and especially the arts community, Mr. Speaker. I was proud to have the Premier with me on the announcement back in February of our five-point plan, our arts and culture plan, Mr. Speaker, and I could tell the member opposite that the arts community was well this information from the arts community was this information was well received by the arts community throughout Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, and I look forward to working with them to unfold that that five-point plan in the coming months, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the Minister, welcome aboard. Mr. Speaker, we value the rich heritage of this province, and we value the cultural industry that's worth $1.4 billion to the Nova Scotian economy. So it outraged us when the government cut funding for culture last year by 10.5%, revealing it doesn't appreciate our heritage or understand our economy. But now they've lopped off another 1.3% for the coming fiscal year. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, why is this government one day courting the arts community with new organizations and the next day punishing them with funding cuts?
The Honourable Minister, Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for his second question about this important issue, Mr. Speaker. One of the things that we have taken, Mr. Speaker, I think it's a loud message that we have indicated to Nova Scotians how important we feel this sector is to Nova Scotians. By the creation of this new department, Mr. Speaker, we're going to ensure that the creative economy has a positive effect on the economy of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, especially in rural communities. The creative economy is so important, and it doesn't have to take place in our major cities like Halifax or Sydney, Mr. Speaker. It happens all over the province, Mr. Speaker, in the members' opposite ridings, in the ridings of Yarmouth and Sydney, all across this province, Mr. Speaker. We're going to work with the sector to ensure that they have the support to continue to increase and support the creative economy here in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your final supplementary.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has been paying too much attention to the administration side of this department, not enough to actually developing the artistic community here. Last year, we had an expensive consultation exercise.
It is a bit of a show.
This year, we have the creation of all these new departments and agencies, but the needs of artists, art organizations, creative businesses are being ignored. Arts funding here is such a small item, Mr. Speaker, $9.2 million, and governs such a massive industry worth $1.4 billion, that these cuts make no economic sense. So my final question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, will the Minister promise to pay more attention to artists and to bureaucratic structures?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can tell the Honourable Member across the way that in my short 3 months of being in this overseeing this department, Mr. Speaker, that I've spent a lot more and have addressed many more issues than the previous government, Mr. Speaker. We'll be able to stand on our track record, Mr. Speaker. We know what the former government has done to the arts community over the years, Mr. Speaker. We're working with them, Mr. Speaker, not working against them.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, running short on time, so let's move along. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, scientists from around the world tried to explain to this government that a bounty on coyotes wouldn't work to effectively reduce contact between their population and ours. So I guess, Mr. Speaker, we'll have to ask the Minister, now that the bounty has ended, did it work?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Our coyote program was multifaceted, included education, it included hiring trappers to pursue aggressive animals. It included the pelt incentive program, and it basically is an outreach in several directions, but basically to try to make the animals more wary of the human population. And really the season for licensed fur trappers only ended on March 31st, and it's a little early yet to see those results, but as they come in, we'll assess and monitor the what happened and decide from there.
The honourable member from King's West on your first supplementary.
Speaker, Mr. Speaker, the minister knows full well that the effect that the bounty will have on numbers is only temporary. The best example of this is the fact that we tried this in the 80s and it didn't work. Liberal caucus tried to explain this to the previous minister for the last year, Mr. Speaker, so maybe we'll try with the new minister. My question, will the bounty on coyotes be extended and start again in 2011?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And this is actually not a bounty, where a bounty is year-round, open to anybody and everybody to go after an animal. This is a targeted program. It's called a pelt incentive. It was only by licensed trappers. No one else could go after the animals. And it was only during the season from mid-October till the end of March. And it's too early yet to know whether the program worked, but it will be evaluated as the results come in.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know, the NDP sanitized the cull is what we had. Mr. Speaker, I understand the anxiety and caution people feel about coyotes close to residential population, but this is not a new phenomenon. The NDP government recklessly had a knee-jerk reaction to a situation and can't prove to us whether or not the bounty worked. My question to the minister, when will you show the House the figures on the coyote bounty from last year?
The Honourable Minister for Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, as the results are available, we'll make them available to all Nova Scotians, including here in the House. But it's really part of our incentive to find a way to keep Nova Scotia safer, not to have an aggressive animal in our communities that are harmful to children or teenagers or adults. And really, the pelt incentive was part of that, but so is the education program, so is hiring licensed trappers to deal with aggressive animals, and we also hired a biologist, a specialist in the field, to provide advice. Safety is
order,
the number one
order,
issue.
Please. The time for oral questions put by members to minister has elapsed.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.